This episode of Dean Bakari's Meaningful Show is brought to you by Flashbooks, where you can get best-selling business and self-improvement book summaries that you can read or listen to in under 20 minutes. To learn more and get started for just a buck today, visit www.getflashnotes.com. Welcome to the Meaningful Show podcast, where every single week we work to bring you an inspiring insight, idea, or interview to help you live better, work better, and be better both in life and in business. Brought to you by MeaningfulHQ.com, we've got one very simple goal here on this show, and that is to help you do more of what matters and less of what doesn't. I'm your host, Dean Bakari, and if you're ready, then I'm ready. So let's get into it. Three of the biggest things that are going to determine your success in life, regardless of what you're doing, what dimension, what area of focus, personal or professional, three of the biggest things that are going to determine your success are going to be what you eat, what you think, and how you behave. Now, all three of these are inextricably intertwined with one another. If you eat like crap, you'll think like crap. If you think like crap, you'll behave like crap, right? Makes sense. One collapses right onto the other. It's all connected and intertwined. So what are we going to talk about in this episode? Well, today we're going to talk about and focus specifically on the what you eat part, and the type of impact this can have on the way you think, and more specifically, the way that this affects your brain. And I'm going to pull some insights, some information, some big ideas from a book called Grain Brain by Dr. David Perlmutter. Now, the book, which, by the way, is backed by tons of science and research about the connection between neuroscience and nutrition, in this book, Dr. Perlmutter, the author, focuses primarily on one simple theme, okay? And the theme is how grains, wheat, high-carb diets are pretty much destroying our brain, how they're pretty much destroying the human brain, and what, more importantly, you can do about it, okay? Chronic fatigue, chronic headache, obesity, depression, anxiety, ADHD, these are the things that this book can help you with. I really found it to be incredibly insightful. A lot of awesome big ideas in here. And most importantly, you know, he's got the proof to back it up. And so it really resonated with me because, you know, years ago, one of the things, big discoveries that I made about myself, you know, I went on an elimination diet. I was tired. I was overweight. I was out of shape. I felt, you know, just totally fatigued, headaches. I didn't have energy. And I was like a young kid, you know, I was in my late teens, early 20s. And I'm like, man, I'm not supposed to be feeling like this, right? And so eventually what I decided to do is I decided to just eliminate one thing at a time. And slowly but surely, I realized, okay, so drinking milk, eating dairy and stuff like that, that doesn't make me feel very good. It makes me feel bloated. Makes me constantly farting and just busting farts all over the place. I don't feel good, you know, and it's just all this stuff, like extra phlegm is building up inside of me. Okay, let me cut dairy. Okay, and the next thing I ended up cutting was wheat. And I realized that, okay, when I cut wheat, I feel a lot slimmer. I feel better. I have more energy. You know, I don't feel bloated. And so, you know, that was one big thing that I dropped. And eventually just totally went gluten-free. But, you know, those things led to me discovering what works for me, what doesn't work for me. Some of the ideas in here might not resonate with you. You might not like them. You might not want to try them. And that's okay. You know, every body is literally different. Every body, human body, is literally different from the other. So maybe it won't work for you. But what I can say is that the stuff that I read here in this book is many of the things that I ended up kind of stumbling upon as a result of, you know, just going on an elimination diet to figure out what works for me. And a lot of this stuff here is backed up by research, and it's really, really good stuff. So what I want to do today is just kind of pull some of the big ideas that I think you'll find helpful from the book. And, you know, you can do with them what you choose to do with them, my friend. Let us jump in to big idea number one, your brain on bread. Okay, so quote, I'm quoting the author here, brain dysfunction starts in your daily bread, and I am going to prove it. Modern grains are silently destroying your brain. By modern, I'm not just referring to the refined white flours, pastas, and rice that have been already demonized by the anti-obesity folks. I'm referring to all the grains that so many of us have embraced as being healthful. Whole wheat, multigrain, seven grain, live grain, stone ground, and so on. Basically, I am calling what is arguably our most beloved dietary staple a terrorist group that bullies our most precious organ, the brain. This isn't science fiction, he goes on. It's now documented fact. It is my objective in writing Grain Brain to provide information that is sound and based on evolutionary, modern scientific, and physiological perspectives. This book goes outside the box of the layman's accepted dogma and away from vested corporate interests. Which, by the way, before I continue on with this quote, vested corporate interests, a lot of times you'll read articles that are in total opposition to one another. And just one thing to keep in mind, you might want to look at before you take action on any of the recommendations on some of these articles or blogs and stuff like that that you see out there, even if they're written by a dietitian or an RD or someone with lots of credentials and, you know, goofy letters by their name and stuff like that. What you might want to do is double check and see who paid them to write that article or what funded a specific study. Because oftentimes a lot of studies will be funded by big food companies, you know, big food conglomerates, just like big tobacco, just like big pharma. There's big food, you know, the dairy industry. I just saw a really interesting documentary on Netflix the other day called Cowspiracy, which kind of blew my mind because apparently the majority of the water waste that we're talking about here in California, where I live, you know, there's this big thing about water right now, you know, limit your water. But nobody's talking about the number one biggest factor that has an impact on water. And that apparently, from what I just learned, is this is agriculture. Agriculture. It's pretty intense, man. It kind of makes me start to think a little bit more before I go and just, you know, toss a steak on the grill now. But anyways, back to the point here. Going back to this quote here from Dr. Pearl Mutter. Here we go. Where was I at? Okay. It proposes, so he's talking about how all these ideas that he has here are outside and away from vested corporate interests. And he says that his ideas, it proposes, this book, a new way of understanding the root cause of brain disease and offers a promising message of hope. Brain disease, the message he says, can be largely prevented through the choices you make in life. So, if you haven't figured it out by now, I'll be crystal clear. Crystal clear. This is not just another diet book or generic how-to guide to all things preventative health. This is a game changer. End quote. Wow. All right, so is he joking around? Is he messing around here? No, he's not joking around. This is serious stuff, is from what he's saying. So David Perlmutter, who is this guy? He's one of the few physicians in the United States that's actually got academic credentials from both the world of neuroscience as well as nutrition. So what does this do? This gives him credibility to do what I believe doctors should have been doing in the first place, which is connecting rather than compartmentalizing all these different parts of the human body, right? In order to achieve optimal health and well-being. It's all connected, like we said in the beginning. In other words, if you think of the typical doctor, right? I think typical doctor is a drug dealer because they know more about pills than they do about nutrition. They care more about writing quick fix prescriptions than they do about finding the root cause behind why you're sick in the first place, right? Obviously, this is bad, right? So let's talk a little bit more about his ideas here in Grain Brain. So the next big idea is about, you know, why are grains and wheat so bad? And he kind of goes deep into this. So I'll pull one of his really powerful quotes from the book. And it kind of takes us all the way back to the Neolithic age. Let's dive in here for a second. Quote, "While it's well established that processed foods and refined carbohydrates have contributed to our challenges with obesity and so-called food allergies, no one has explained the relationship between grains and other ingredients and brain health and, In the broader outlook, DNA. It's pretty straightforward, he says. Our genes determine not just how we process food, but more important, how we respond to the foods we eat. There's little doubt that one of the largest and most wide-reaching events in the ultimate decline of brain health in modern society has been the introduction of wheat grain into the human diet. While it's true that our Neolithic ancestors consumed minuscule amounts of this grain, what we now call wheat bears little resemblance to the wild einkorn variety that our forebears consumed on rare occasions. With modern hybridization and gene-modifying technology, the 133 pounds of wheat that the average American consumes each year shares almost no genetic, structural, or chemical likeness to what hunter-gatherers might have stumbled upon so many years ago. And therein lies the problem. We are increasingly challenging our physiology with ingredients for which we are not genetically prepared. End quote. Damn. Human evolution. So, all right, let's break this down real quick. So human evolution occurred over a period of a few million years, right? And at which point throughout this evolution did we introduce grains? When did we introduce grains over this few million year evolution of humankind? About 10,000 years ago. So let's do the math here. 10,000 years barely puts a dent into the 2.5 to 3 million years prior to the introduction of common grains, right? So this then tells us what? It tells us that we have not yet evolved enough as a human, you know, our biology has not yet evolved enough to consume these massive quantities of grains that the majority of the modern world includes in their daily diet. So there isn't much in this world, if you think about it, that's capable of transitioning from small, tiny quantities of consumption of something to large, huge, massive quantities of consumption of something without experiencing problems of some kind, right? So, and in the case of human beings, you and I, going from the tiny bits of wild grains to massive loads, 133 pounds a year of genetically modified grains, you know, that's going to result in some serious problems, right? So what can you do to take action on this? I would recommend you just cut out wheat altogether, with the exception of a cheat day every now and then or holidays or something like that. I mean, I don't eat wheat at all. Every now and then, when I know that I don't have anything really important to do for that day and the next day, to me, wheat is like getting hammered, right? It's like boozing and just drinking a lot of alcohol because the next day you're going to be hungover. That's what I experience. I experience a hangover from eating wheat. So I would say, and what he recommends in the books, eliminate wheat or at least cut back on it, right? The wheat that's commonly consumed today, it's not like the wheat that we consumed hundreds, even 60 years ago. It's been hybridized. It's been modified. It's been all messed up with. It's been screwed around with in a lab. And it's just not what it used to be, man. You know, now it's robo-wheat. So I don't even think we should call it wheat anymore because it's totally different. So think about the foods that you choose to eat on a regular basis. You know, are these foods primarily grain-based? Are they, you know, wheat-containing? You know, do they have a lot of flour in them? Let's talk about some of the negative health implications like obesity, neurological disorders, things like that as we go into the next few big ideas. But just keep that in mind. You know, what are some of the foods that you eat? So the next big idea that he mentions here, there's so much important stuff here, man. It's crazy. So next big idea is about, you know, if you're feeling foggy brained, it's likely it's because of inflammation. Okay, so what's inflammation? Quote, researchers have known for some time now that the cornerstone of all degenerative conditions, including brain disorders, is inflammation. But what they didn't have documented until now are the instigators of that inflammation, the first missteps that prompt this deadly reaction. And what they are finding is that gluten, and a high carbohydrate diet for that matter, are among the most prominent stimulators of inflammatory pathways that reach the brain. What's most disturbing about this discovery, however, is that we often don't know when our brains are being negatively affected. right? Digestive disorders and food allergies are much easier to spot because symptoms such as gas and bloating and pain, constipation and diarrhea emerge relatively quickly. We notice them immediately. But the brain is a more elusive organ. It could be enduring assaults at a molecular level, without you even feeling it. Unless you're nursing a headache or managing a neurological problem that's clearly evident, it can be hard to know what's going on in the brain until it's too late. When it comes to brain disease, once the diagnosis is in for something like dementia, turning the train around is hard. So, if you're listening to this, you don't have dementia, probably, and you're probably relatively young, but I think about, you know, sometimes what are some of the things that I can do now while I'm young, while I'm in my 20s, you know, and going into my 30s and 40s, what are some of the things that I can do in my younger years to be proactive, to take action to prevent some of these later issues from arising? And also, what are some of the things that you can do right now to eliminate things like brain fog, you know, feeling fatigued, foggy brained, lost a little bit, like you don't have clarity when you're thinking. And a lot of this is because of inflammation. So what causes inflammation? Gluten consumption and diets that are high in carbohydrate, right? Let me say that again. What causes inflammation? Gluten consumption and high carb diets, right? So if you ever wonder, think about, you know, ever wonder where food coma comes from? Right? Think about the last time you had a meal that made you feel super tired. I'll bet you that it was one that was really high in carbs, right? So here's the deal. When we decide to introduce inflammation-inducing foods into our diet, what happens? We become more susceptible to health issues that can be as problematic as brain fog, chronic fatigue, or as devastating as depression and Alzheimer's. That's a big, big, big insight right there. It's a huge, huge idea that you can start taking action on literally as soon as you're done listening to this episode. Or you can pause me right now and start taking action. Put it on your to-do list. Eliminate, you know, my pantry of gluten and other, you know, stop eating so many carbs if that's what you do, to cut back a little bit slowly. Just take a little bit of action at least. So let's see here. Another big idea that he shares is this thing that he does where he quizzes people during lectures. So he calls it the glycemic index quiz. So this one's really interesting. Quote, when I give lectures to members of the medical community, one of my favorite slides is a photo of four common foods. One, a slice of whole wheat bread. Two, a Snickers bar. Three, a tablespoon of pure white sugar. And four, a banana. I then ask the audience to guess which one produces the greatest surge in blood sugar, or which has the highest glycemic index, or GI, a numerical rating that reflects a measure of how quickly blood sugar levels rise after eating a particular type of food. The glycemic index encompasses a scale of 0 to 100, with higher values given to foods that cause the most rapid rise in blood sugar. The reference point is pure glucose, which has a GI of 100. Okay, 9 times out of 10, people pick the wrong food. No, it's not sugar, which has a GI of 68. It's not the candy bar, the Snickers bar, which has a GI of 55. It's not the banana, which has a GI of 54. It's the whole wheat bread, coming in at a whopping GI of 71, putting it on par with white bread, right? So much for thinking that whole wheat bread is better than white bread. How many times have you been at the table, people reach for wheat bread, say, oh yeah, it's healthier. It's the same thing. It's no healthier. It's no better for you. We've known for more than 30 years that wheat increases blood sugar more than table sugar does, but we still somehow seem to think that it's not possible. It's counterintuitive, right? It seems counterintuitive, but it's a fact. Few foods produce as much of a surge in blood sugar levels, insulin, as those made with wheat, right? So let's talk about insulin for a second. Spikes in blood sugar, insulin levels are bad for the body. Therefore, it's important for us to regulate those blood sugar levels by eating foods that are low GI, right? All of the foods mentioned a moment ago would be considered high on the GI scale, which is bad because they spike our blood sugar. And when our blood sugar spikes, right, when we eat things like wheat bread and other sugary things, high carb foods, then it signals to our body that, okay, it's time to turn these carbohydrates into sugar, right? The higher sugary, the more sugar content a food that you eat has, the faster, obviously, the body is going to start to digest that. And what does your body do with sugar that it doesn't need, which most of us eat too much sugar? It turns it into fat, right? So carbohydrate consumption, regardless of what kind of carbs you eat, by the way, it's going to turn into sugar in your body. We're going to digest it as sugar. Now, the reason why it's better to eat low GI foods like complex carbohydrates, like sweet potatoes and stuff like that, and brown rice, if you're going to go for them, is because they take longer to digest and break down and turn into sugar. So it gives you a sustained energy rather than a spike, right? And so it takes longer for your body to absorb that rather than it just being immediate sugar rush style. And so therefore, you have less chances, more of a chance of actually using it as energy rather than turning it straight into fat. Okay, so tons of other negative things about high GI foods to keep in mind, but just for now, I think that's good enough. Next big idea here is just eliminate gluten. He talks about gluten sensitivity. Okay, quote, gluten sensitivity with or without the presence of celiac disease, which is an extreme autoimmune disease, by the way, which if you eat gluten, then it really breaks you down. It messes you up in a lot of ways. You can be hospitalized. But for most folks, they're just gluten sensitive, gluten intolerant. So go back to this quote here. Gluten sensitivity increases the production of inflammatory cytokines. Remember, we talked about those just a second ago. And these inflammatory cytokines are pivotal players in neurodegenerative conditions. Some of my most remarkable case studies, he says, involve people transforming their lives and health through the total elimination of gluten from their diets and a new appreciation for fats instead of carbs. I've watched this single dietary shift lift depression, relieve chronic fatigue, reverse type 2 diabetes, extinguish obsessive compulsive behavior, and cure many neurological challenges from brain fog to bipolar disorder. End quote. That right there, straight up, is probably one of the highest leverage takeaways that you can take away from this episode, from this book. If you just make this one simple thing, eliminate gluten, for me, I can just tell you from my own experience, if the case studies in this book and the research and the science behind it weren't enough, for me, when I did it, it totally changed my life. I have more clarity. I can think better. I'm not tired. I'm not fatigued. I have more energy. I can sit in one place and read an entire book. My mind isn't wandering. You know, it's just so many different things that, you know, eating gluten just has really, eliminating gluten has totally changed, turned around my life. Honestly, totally changed it. So, let's move on here into this big idea. Let's see. That's it. Let's dive into the next one, which is about eating fat. Okay, so eating fat doesn't make you fat. Quote, interestingly, the human dietary requirement for carbohydrate is virtually zero. We can survive on a minimal amount of carbohydrate, which can be furnished by the liver as needed, but we can't go long without fat. Okay, unfortunately, most of us equate the idea of eating fat to being fat, when in reality, obesity and its metabolic consequences has almost nothing to do with dietary fat consumption and everything to do with our addiction to carbs. The same is true about cholesterol. Eating high cholesterol foods has no impact on our actual cholesterol levels. And the alleged correlation between high cholesterol and higher cardiac risk is an absolute fallacy. Of all the lessons in this book, he says, the one I hope you take seriously is the following. Respect your genome. Fat, not carbohydrate, is the preferred fuel for human metabolism and has been for all of human evolution. We have consumed a high-fat diet for the past 2 million years. And it is only since the advent of agriculture about 10,000 years ago that carbohydrates have become abundant in our food supply. We still have a hunter-gatherer genome. End quote. Damn. Okay. Real quick recap there, because there are a lot of ideas within that idea. Eating fat doesn't make you fat. In fact, fat, not carbohydrate, is the preferred fuel source for the human body. Now, here's the thing to keep in mind here. Not all fat is created equal. So what you want to do is you want to focus on consuming fats from coconut oils, avocados, olives, things like that, good fats, rather than vegetable oils, canola oils. You know, you want to eliminate or decrease your intake of safflower oils, corn oils, canola oils, soybean oils, and you want to replace those with good oils like coconut oils, avocado oils, olive oil, flaxseed oil. That's a huge one right there. Really, really big. So those are some of the really big ideas. There are other big ideas from Grain Brain. And if you want those, feel free to check out the summary over at getflashnotes.com/grain-brain. Or just go to getflashnotes.com and you can get everything you need from there. And you can dive into the full-on deep dive book summary, as well as tons of other book summaries. But to close it out here, there are three basic essentials to general health and well-being that I want you to keep in mind if you could. Number one is nutrition. Number two is exercise. Number three is sleep. And we're going to dive into nutrition and exercise and sleep into some upcoming episodes here that are focused on health. But think about this for a second. All three of these, nutrition, exercise, sleep, are all connected to what we mentioned in the very beginning of this episode. Three of the biggest things that are going to determine your success in life, regardless of what you're doing, are what you eat, what you think, and how you behave. If you can get each of these areas handled, you'll be on track to living a more fulfilling lifestyle overall, both personally and professionally. Yo, it's Dean. Listen, I hope you enjoyed this episode of the podcast. If you found this episode inspiring, or if anything else you've heard on the show has helped you or made an impact on your life in any way, I'd really appreciate it if you showed me a little love with a quick review over on iTunes or on whichever podcast platform you tune into the show on. Every single review helps us reach and inspire more people to live like they give a damn. Listen, if you've got self-help questions of your own that you'd like me to answer live on the podcast, hit me up over at meaningfulhq.com. You can submit them over on the contact page, or you can just shoot your questions directly to me at questions@deanbakari.com. Thanks again so much for subscribing, sharing, and tuning into the show. I've said it before, I'll say it again. It's because of you and tens of thousands of other listeners from around the world tuning in every single week, week after week, day after day, that we are able to continue creating content to help you crush it and make an impact in your life and at work. So thank you for being part of this and continuing to share the podcast with your friends, your family, and anyone else you think it could help. Until next time, this is Dean Bakari telling you to go out there every single day and live like you give a damn.